Hello, and welcome to another episode of NEST podcast on equity, diversity, and inclusion within school psychology. I am Shayla Desai, the NEST Director of Educational Practice. My pronouns are she, her, and I'm honored to be the host of this series. This episode will focus on school psychology graduate programs and specifically on program culture. Today, I am joined by guests Catalina Uribe, Sherry Proctor, and Devaditra Talapatra. Catalina, Sherry, and Tanya, could you please briefly share your pronouns, a bit about your current role, and anything you're comfortable sharing about your identities, including areas of intersectionality? Catalina, can we start with you?
Sure. Hi, everyone. I am originally from Colombia, so I have a very Colombian name, Catalina Uribe. And I'm currently a graduate student at Nova Southeastern University. My pronouns are she, her, and I think that about covers it.
Yeah, thank you. Sherry, you want to go next?
Sure. Hello, everyone. My name is Sherry Proctor. I am currently a professor of school psychology at Queens College, which is with the City University of New York. My pronouns are she, her. I identify as a heterosexual, cisgender, African-American woman from the U.S. South, specifically Florida.
All right. Tanya, go ahead.
Hi, I am Devaditra Talapatra, but I go by Tanya. I'm an assistant professor at the University of Denver. I identify as Indian American. I was born in Calcutta and came over when I was 5. So nobody has ever called me by my first name. I've always been called Tanya, but it's not official. So it's kind of interesting. I identify as heterosexual, cisgender. My pronouns are she, her. And I'm super excited to be here. I also have 4 family members with developmental disabilities. And so that is a passion area of mine. And I have an executive functioning disorder myself. So I'm excited to bring a disability perspective to a lot of my work.
Awesome. Thank you all for sharing. So we'll get into some of the questions. Sherry and Catalina, I want to address this first question to you. What does a culturally responsive and inclusive program climate look like?
Okay, I'll take a shot at it, Catalina. So when we're talking about program climate, we're talking about things such as sense of belonging. So do students, graduate students, feel respected and like they belong? We're talking about things like relationships with peers and faculty and also program support. So I just kind of wanted to give a lay of the land of what we're talking about when we're talking about program climate. So what I'm going to share with you is just a little bit that I've learned from research that I've done myself related to graduate program climate and school site programs, but also the larger body of research related to program climate. And the findings kind of hold true across fields in terms of program climate and what we need to do in order to be inclusive to students who are marginalized. So one of the first things we need to think about is that students who come from traditionally or historically marginalized backgrounds need to feel included and valued. So it's not enough just to bring students into our programs, meaning to recruit a diverse group of students. Once we get those students into our programs, we need to make sure that they feel included and valued and like they belong. And when we're talking about marginalized backgrounds, we can be talking about students who are minoritized along many different dimensions and identities, including race, ethnicity, sexual orientation, gender, like Tanya just spoke about, disability, language use, many different ways that students come to us in our school psych programs from marginalized backgrounds. The other really important thing is to think about the diversity amongst the faculty who are within the school psych program. So Students are very aware of whether we're just talking the talk or we're actually walking the walk in terms of what we're saying we would like, and then what is being reflected back to them in terms of the faculty who are in front of them. So programs who are interested truly in having a climate that is open and welcoming to students from diverse backgrounds should have faculty who are diverse. And the other thing that's really important about the faculty diversity is you also want to model inclusion and behaviors for our graduate students. So bringing in a diverse faculty, but also a faculty who know how to get along and who also value the different dimensions of diversity that we bring to school site programs. I have a couple more. I didn't know if I should just keep going or let Catalina jump in. What would you prefer, Shayla? Should I
Why don't
just?
you keep going and then
Okay.
Catalina?
Okay. So students and faculty also should have warm and supportive relationships. So that's really consistent across the research, including research that I've done specifically related to the African American student experiences in school site programs. So, from a study that I did, I actually wanted to share African American students who successfully completed their program shared some of the strategies and retention strategies that their programs used to retain them. And one of the things they said was that overall, for all students to have a program with faculty who are open, and they use the specific words of having an open door policy. So students feel like they can have access to their faculty. They're not afraid to engage with their faculty. They feel like their faculty are warm and caring towards them. But for this African American students in particular, they thought it was really important for them to have deeper relationships with their faculty that actually extended into mentoring relationships with their faculty. Some of the things we know from the research is that, school psych has a predominantly white faculty, just like our practitioners are predominantly white and female. And so a lot of the research has shown that if a faculty member has the dispositions towards social justice, dispositions towards being open to cultural diversity, that cross-racial mentoring relationships actually do work well for our students of color, in particular in our school psych programs. But those types of relationships have to be absent from things like racial microaggressions, where oppression actually shows up within the mentoring relationship, whether intentionally or unintentionally, but causes great harm to students. So just keeping in mind that if we're going to engage in cross-racial mentoring relationships, the mentor has to be very culturally responsive and culturally aware so that harm is not replicated within that mentoring relationship. And a few more. Minoritized students must be academically and socially integrated into their programs. So, what does that mean? That means that they feel welcome to study groups. Other students invite them to study groups. They feel like they're not being excluded. They feel comfortable attending program socials. They don't feel as if it's a burden to go and to be with their faculty and their peers. Another thing is a curriculum that's inclusive and speaks to multicultural and social justice issues. One thing that's really important in relation to how we deliver that curricula is that we shouldn't have just the minority or minoritized faculty member who teaches the multicultural class, teaching specifically to multicultural and social justice issues just within that one class. What we know from the research is that those issues should be integrated and embedded throughout the entire curriculum. And one of the best models is to have a standalone class that's related to multicultural social justice issues, but also to integrate those issues from assessment to counseling skills. And then finally, programs should build in supports for minoritized students to connect with others from similar backgrounds during their training experiences. So that would look like practica experiences, internship experiences in diverse, culturally diverse schools. But also, another thing that we found from the research, particularly in school psychology, that's really important is for us to think about those field-based supervisors that we bring to do that very important training for our students that extends beyond the university. What do they look like? What are their characteristics? Do they mirror some of the cultural diversity of the students that we hopefully are bringing into our program? And making sure that at that level of our training and graduate education, our field-based supervisors are also culturally diverse.
Thank you, Sherry. That was very thorough and I think gives us a great context for the rest of our conversation. Catalina, I would love to hear kind of from the student perspective what you see as a culturally responsive and inclusive program.
Sure. So yes, Sherry basically covered it all from, you know, the research standpoint, and everything was very, you know, like the fact of it. And so I'll bring in kind of more of the everyday practice of it, as at least from the way that I've seen it and the way that I've spoken with other graduate students. But yes, the number one thing is definitely to, you know, be intentional on doing things that are not just performative, right? So following, you know, the events of last summer, my university had a lot of town hall meetings, and we had program specific town hall meetings where we were able to, you know, open up a discussion on these topics, and, you know, students were able to just cry and just, you know, get whatever they needed. So that was a really nice thing that they did. But then in other ways, I feel like maybe there wasn't as much follow through as there could have been. And not to say that, you know, those town halls were performative, but it just didn't dig deep enough. I do think that the last consideration that Sherry brought to our attention is also one of the most important ones that I've been, you know, trying to advocate more in my studies. But I feel as though diversity is always, you know, the last consideration. It's not really the root of where we come from, which is what I think that at this point we really need. And so if that could be a shift in the program and the way that we learn things, because of course there are electives that are offered that we can take and we can further our education, but then think about the students that are most likely to take those courses. It's probably students from minoritized backgrounds, you know? And so I think that if it was better integrated into our actual curricula, then everybody would be learning these topics and kind of honing their craft in it and just creating a better awareness of it. So I think that that's important. And then the last thing I think that really shows cultural responsiveness and inclusivity is to create these protected spaces and stay true to it. So I know that there was an experience where students tried to create a mentorship program specifically for minoritized students and, you know, culturally and linguistically diverse professionals to get a sense of representation within the field, right? And seek mentorship in that sense. But other students that, you know, were of non-minoritized backgrounds wanted to participate as well, which, you know, is also coming from a great place, but it ended up changing the mentorship program from what it was meant to be to any generic mentorship program that really was already existent. So I think that it would have been important at that moment in time for the faculty members to really consider the implications of what they were, you know, approving, because it was for the sake of building the numbers and the program in general to get a little foundation for it. But at the same time, if it waters down the point of it, then, you know, it's really not the best route to take.
Thank you. That's really helpful to understand. And Catalina, I want to follow up with a question related to the Graduate Student Committee survey. So recently, the GSC surveyed students about the type of support they need from their programs with regards to social justice and anti-racism. Could you share some of the key themes that came out of the survey results and what minoritized students need from their graduate programs?
Absolutely. So this was a pretty comprehensive survey, and we got a lot of great responses. We actually received over 1,000 responses. So we also got a good view of what students around the country are thinking and feeling. The main points were that you know, not just is there a desire, but there's a need for those protective spaces that I just mentioned, and specifically mentorship programs for Black, Indigenous, and people of color in general. Some of the other key themes that we found were that, you know, there's, again, a need for more representation in professionals in school psychology leadership roles, you know, not just our faculty members, but also within NASP, within our state organizations and beyond, really. We also saw that there was an importance of engaging in self-reflection as a field. So again, allowing opportunities for these discussions to take place between students and professionals, just trying to hear different sides and different points of view. Respondents to the survey as a whole, really they had expressed a lack of programmatic and then student level responses to all of the social injustices and the civil unrest taking place. So again, trying to be more intentional and digging deeper, because at this point in time, it's kind of like when, you know, quarantine was new and there were so many things coming out of how to deal with Zoom fatigue and just general things. Like, we got it. We have the superficial understanding of how to cope with social injustices, but it's time to dig deeper and really get into the root of more of those problems.
Yeah, thank you. That makes a lot of sense. And it's helpful to hear kind of where students more globally are with these issues. And I'm pleasantly surprised to hear how many students respond to the survey, which kind of to me speaks to the like deep desire for our students to have this level of support. So I appreciate that as well. Sherry and Catalina, what do you think is the first meaningful step that programs should take to develop a more inclusive and supportive program culture? I imagine that most, if not all, of our school psychology programs want to be able to be culturally responsive and inclusive, but may not know where to start. So any tips for kind of one place to start, one step to take?
Yeah, I would definitely say that programs should assess where they are right now, because I think often, you know, we love data in school psych, and it's very important for us to know kind of like baseline, where are we in terms of program climate? And so there are graduate program climate scales available. I know some of our school psych programs use climate surveys to assess where they are, but I would like to talk about two different ways that we assess where we are. And it kind of follows up with what Catalina was saying in terms of inward assessment and outward assessment. So I am going to talk about it in terms of at the faculty level, as well as in terms of at the graduate student level. In terms of an inward assessment, I think as faculty, we really have to assess and engage and grapple with how do we really feel about our own efforts at creating an inclusive and supportive program culture. So we need to think about what are the roadblocks that we have in our programs related to DEI efforts. So one of the roadblocks that you really need to consider and honestly grapple with are your faculty dispositions towards DEI efforts, right? Are we truly desiring to do that in our program? Things like traditional practices that we have engaged in little self-reflection in our program historically. At the faculty level, in terms of this work, that means really thinking about our own behaviors and how have we engaged with students in the past. And I'll give an example of just mentoring, since we've been talking about the importance of mentoring. Often, and it's a natural kind of human way of being, we're attracted to people who are similar to us, right? People with similar backgrounds, people that we feel comfortable with, people who look like us, people who remind us of our nieces or nephews. And I think what happens often with faculty is that when we're attracted to folks who we mentor, we may, because we're human, actually be attracted to students who are reflective of that experience that we know so well from our own experiences or from people who are like us. And so that's what I mean about self-reflection. in order to have a truly inclusive program where all students feel like it's culturally responsive to their needs, we have to go outside of ourselves, right? We have to be comfortable with difference. We have to embrace difference and celebrate difference, which means that our mentors, our mentees would look different than we might look. And that should be reflected in our programs where faculty across different demographics are working with students who are different than them. And I also think that, just as a tangent, when we do that type of work with students in our programs, it makes our research better. It makes our teaching better. It makes our program climate better because people are feeling really included and we're learning from each other across our differences. So we have to have honest conversations as faculty, and we have to reflect on where we are with DEI efforts, our comfortability with it, and how do we get beyond some of those kind of human characteristics of wanting to be with folks like ourselves. We also need to talk about what are the facilitators, right? So if we have a true desire for increased EDI efforts, that's a facilitator. Do we have a commitment to learning and growing and moving outside of our comfort zone? That's a facilitator. Do we have university support? One of the things Catalina was talking about was this last year where so many different opportunities were popping up through universities to engage in racial justice learning and activism. And a lot of those opportunities, I think, extended to thinking about DEI efforts, recruitment, retention of particularly racially diverse folks and programs. So it's a prime opportunity to take advantage of the university support, which could be funding, it could be professional development for how do you mentor across difference, things like that that universities could support. And then the second dimension is related to the outward. And that would be our students, our graduate students, who are the most essential and most important part of school site graduate programs. So, how do our graduate students experience our programs and also our graduates? Because they have a whole bunch of good information to let us know how well we're doing in terms of DEI efforts. So, I think programs systematically surveying students and graduates related to program climate issues, being able to understand the strengths and the weaknesses from their perspectives, if possible, and it may not be possible because often we don't have very diverse student bodies in school site programs. So students may be hesitant to put demographic information on survey data, but if possible, to collect data by demographics and then to be able to look across student demographics, taking into account intersectionality issues and trying to see for which students does this program feel good, for which students feel supported, feel integrated academically and socially, feel like they belong and are valued. And then using those program climate surveys that we give to our students to improve and to truly take action to make our programs places where all students, but particularly marginalized students who have been traditionally excluded from our training and our profession, feel like they belong, included. And I'm going to go so far as to say celebrate it. We should be celebrating our students.
Yeah, I love that, celebrating our students. Catalina, anything that you'd like to add from the student perspective?
Absolutely. So I really love, again, the last point that Sherry made. And this is something that I think is easily done with the existing students that are in the program. Again, asking what made you choose this university and this program? And what are some of the things that you were thinking, maybe this isn't the program for me? And that way, if there's more transparency in that process, or also including existing graduate students in the interview process with prospective students, that way they can see, hey, there is representation in the student body. And even if there's not representation at the faculty level, I think I'll still be able to, find support and find the, like culturally what I need from my fellow students. So I think that that would be an important thing to take because, of course, we don't know if it's just that, is it a lower rate of acceptance? Is it too harsh of, interview standards, or is it the other way around where it's not a welcoming interview in that sense? So it's important to think of those things.
Yeah, thank you. That makes a lot of sense. Sherry, another question for you, and Catalina, something you said earlier kind of alluded to this, but how do you protect initiatives that are intended specifically for minoritized students?
So it's funny because when Catalina was reflecting earlier on the experience of that mentoring program, I was thinking about this question and my response to it. But I think we have to be unapologetic about the need for such initiatives. So, you know, specifically when Catalina was saying, well, other students, you know, who were not minoritized wanted to take part in it. I think one of the things we have to be able to say is there's a need, there's a specific need that this specific initiative is filling for this demographic of students, and particularly in a field like school psychology, where the demographics of the field are increasingly different than those of the children and families that we serve. And we know from research how important mentoring programs are to our students of color who are matriculating through our programs, that support that they need. So my first recommendation is we need to be unapologetic about the need for these initiatives. We need to name the need for these initiatives. So we need to be able to say why it's important to have these initiatives. I also think we should collect data on outcomes of these initiatives, because I think data really does help when people don't understand something. It helps them to understand the value of initiatives that we have. And then I also think that we need to center the student and the graduate student voice in advocating for such initiatives, because our students know what they need. And I think if we listen to them and we center their voices are very, very, very powerful. And then finally, we need to share about these initiatives, because I think often things are going on in our universities around initiatives, and we don't really know across programs or across the country of the great things that folks are doing in terms of DEI work in their programs. And I think sharing about our initiatives not only underscores the need for them, but it also provides models for other folks. And it's also celebratory. So I think that getting that momentum where we're all talking about what we're doing and sharing the good things that are coming in terms of cultural diversity and responsiveness and DEI efforts in our programs, I think we should share. We need to talk about it, shout about it.
Yeah, thank you, Sherry. I totally agree. So I'm going to shift gears a little bit to Tanya and some of the work that's been happening at DU. So Tanya, could you share a bit about the program climate survey? What was the origins of it? And I know that your students were very much involved in this work. And so if you could represent some of their thoughts as well.
Absolutely. So first, I want to acknowledge the students that created and developed and really brought this survey to life. So first, I want to acknowledge SASP, Student Association of School Psychology members, SASP members, Sierra Townsend, then the SASP president at that time, Audrey Ford, and then again, at that time, a non-SASP member, first-year student, Victoria Isaac. The three of them really spearheaded this program evaluation effort that Sherry has been talking about, really from the graduate student perspective, assessing and reviewing what we as a school psychology program were doing. So initially, our counseling psychology program had a social justice committee, which was run by a student board. And in 2017, they partnered with the Cultural Center at DU to create a climate survey. And that climate survey was to look at the student experience regarding biases, microaggressions, microassaults, and then the overall cultural strengths and weaknesses of the program. And then in 2019, our SAS board determined that we also needed an evaluation for the culture of our school psych program. The origin of the counseling psych and our survey stemmed from racist and oppressive events that were happening within our program. So historically marginalized and minoritized students within our program were experiencing various micro and macroaggressions from students and faculty members. And this really prompted our students to say, hey, we need to do some evaluation. We need to figure out what can be done. And I will take no credit for this, even though I am the SAS faculty advisor, and I can only speak to how amazing and strong our own students are. So they decided amongst themselves that the students needed a way to share their voice and experience within the program. And they wanted to share this with the professors in a systematic way, using data to highlight what was happening within the program. The students, again, determined that it was imperative for the program to start listening to the student experiences, particularly the students that identified as marginalized or minoritized in a majority white, majority female program. So they took this CP survey and then they adapted it, particularly for our school psych program. And they asked for only one demographic question, that what year in the program are you? And then after that, they asked for, they use sliding scales. So the respondents rated their perceived privilege in areas of identity. So race, age, religion, socioeconomic status, gender identity, sexual orientation, education, et cetera. And the students determined that this could be one way to protect the confidentiality of respondents, especially since our program is majority white. If you say that, for example, I'll take myself. If you say that you are an Indian American second year student, that's me. There's only one. So we wanted to make sure we protected the identity of our students. We also wanted to get a sense of how certain people with more or less perceived power express their experience of connectedness in the program. So they informed all of the stakeholders, that's the department chair, all of the school psych faculty, and the SAS board, about this survey, and then they moved forward. March of 2020, they distributed the survey. Summer of 2020, they analyzed the survey. Fall of 2020, they presented to the faculty. And then the winter of 2021, the results were presented at a town hall to the students that gave the students an opportunity to ask the SAS board and the faculty how we were responding to the results of the survey. And I think this leads to your next question.
Yeah, and I just need to say that I'm so impressed. This is such a thoughtfully done survey, and especially listening to you talk about those demographic questions and the perceived levels of privilege. Like, that's just, I just want to say that I think that's brilliant, and kudos to your students. So yes, the next question is, were the faculty receptive to hearing this feedback? How did that go?
And again, I want to reiterate that I'm reading responses from Sierra and Audrey, and they wrote yes, exclamation point. So as a faculty member, I think that makes me feel relieved in some way that our students felt that we were responsive. Sierra wrote, as the student who presented the data to the faculty, they were all very supportive. They received supportive feedback, including thank yous for the hard work that they did to collect and analyze the data. The faculty asked follow-up questions to make sure they understood the data correctly, and then asked time to meet as a faculty to discuss the data amongst themselves and decide on next steps. And then she said, perhaps Dr. Talpatra can add more. So we as a faculty did meet. We met several times, and we really delved into this data. And again, as Sherry mentioned, that data piece is so important, because we were able to say, okay, what does the quantitative information say? And then what does the qualitative information say? How can we read what is explicitly stated and then between the lines itself? And we figured out various strategies that we can implement within our program to say, hey, we're here, we're listening, and we're gonna try. And we didn't ever assume that we would achieve cultural competence. We assumed that we could keep working in response to our students. So one professor, Dr. Cynthia Hazel, conducted a year-long series about allyship and listening. She did it every single Thursday, and she called it Thursdays with Dr. Hazel, and really emphasized this idea of, and it was primarily geared towards our majority white students, to how we can move from saying, yeah, we support Black students, to say, we are an ally. We're gonna be more than support. We're gonna act on it. And so she did this for one whole year. Dr. Tara Raines brought this idea of addressing, and this is from Pamela Hayes, and it goes through various aspects of intersectionalities. And she suggested that perhaps each of the faculty could create some addressing slides to help our students better understand the perspectives that we came from. So the addressing model stands for age and generation, developmental disability, disability acquired, religion, ethnicity and race, socioeconomic status, sexual orientation, national origin and language, and gender. And so each of our faculty committed to talking about each of these areas with our students. And I will say that at first I was very hesitant. It's not something that I have always felt comfortable talking about, again, within a majority white student body, about my race, my ethnicity, my religious beliefs. But I did, and I had so many students come up to me and respond and say, hey, I have ADHD. Can you talk to me about what grad school experiences were like? Or this is the first time a faculty member has noted asexuality, and I really identify with that. Can I talk to you about it? And I felt that it opened up a lot of connections to students in new ways, and it got them more invested in us as faculty, and we got to invest more in them as students. We also added various topics and concepts to class discussions in religion. So one faculty member added in a study of religion and spirituality into their curriculum. We talked more about the trans experience and also what adoptive parenting looks like in our early childhood courses. We did an overhaul to our school psychology assessment clinic, and we included more culturally sensitive intake paperwork and assessment processes as well. And then we invited the students to learn more about the process of hiring adjuncts and some of the programmatic decisions that we were making. I think sometimes when students just see the end result, they might not understand the reasoning behind it. So we tried to part the curtains a little bit more. And overall, the faculty wanted to discuss the data with the students. So we opened it up in the town hall, and we gave space in our classes to talk about it, because we did want to make real changes based on the student response. And the survey, again, the students were so brilliant. The survey really allowed us an opportunity to tailor our program so that it spoke to the needs of the student body. And by doing so, I think it made them feel prouder of their own program and the curriculum that they were learning.
Yeah, that's incredible. And I was going to ask about how that data was going to be used, but you provided such wonderful examples of how the faculty really took this information to heart and are kind of going forward in these really concrete ways to make change. And that's awesome. So I wanted to wrap up with a final question to all of you. What advice do you have for students and faculty that are trying to make changes in their own programs? And Tanya, maybe you want to start.
So again, I asked Sierra and Audrey to share what they thought about what faculty and programs should do. And they say, one, utilize our researchers. They said that programs dedicated to shaping the next generation of school psychologists, especially PhD students, are studying research techniques and program evaluation. As school psychologists, this is what we do. This is Audrey speaking. I think sometimes it's easy to separate these worlds, but it's important to acknowledge that the expertise is already here and not a niche resource that we need to track down. There are many things methodologically that we can do to improve our programs. The most important thing is to decide to start. And I just was, I think that, man, I was not this smart as a grad student. I was not. And I'm blown away by that word. So a couple other things, they mentioned collaboration is key. They talked about making sure that you're talking to one another, not just students to students, but student to faculty and faculty to faculty. And then I really appreciate this one. They said programs should be curious. They should be curious about people of all different identities and how they experience the program itself. It's easy for us to assume our programs need improvement, but the responses might show differently and it can show specificity. Sierra wanted to add, do not be afraid to speak up. We need to advocate for what we need and what we want to see changed in a program's climate. And then Audrey added, keep trying. The field of school psychology needs to be more supportive and inclusive of individuals with traditionally marginalized identities. There are ways that we can improve. If something doesn't work, ask experts, read the research, and try it another way. So I think that beautifully sums up several things.
Yeah, thank you. And thanks to your students as well. Catalina, would you like to add any advice that you might have for students or faculty trying to make changes?
Sure. I think that, you know, what Tanya's students said kind of sums it up for me as well. I think that collaboration between students and faculty is really important. You know, we're all working towards the greater good. We all want to, you know, make sure that us as students are the best school psychologists we can be, and that faculty is training the best school psychologists that they can train. And a lot of this does revolve around being aware and, you know, have a better understanding of diversity and what that actually means. And I really love the point that Tanya brought up about not assuming that your program needs changes, because again, you know, sometimes identity is so individual to a person that even though you looking at somebody, you might think they identify one way, they might not. And so to assume that something is needed just because of, you know, the outward presentation of the students or something like that is, you can miss the mark by looking at just that. So yeah, I think that the most important step is one, to decide to start, and two, to try to do it together.
Thank you. That's great. And Sherry, any other thoughts?
I'm just like blown away by Tanya's students. Like, yeah. It's just amazing. Brilliant. That's how you describe them. And I would agree. So much of what they said, I was just nodding my head like, yes, 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 because they are right on target, along with Catalina. Like, I think one of the things we always have to think about as a field is not lose what we're doing this for. Like, we're here to serve pre-K to 12 kids. And, you know, sometimes that might extend to college students, depending upon what type of environment a school psychologist works in. But the things we do in our school psych program are really getting our students ready to be able to truly be responsive to the needs of our pre-K to 12 population. And so we should be perfecting things related to DEI, because we know when our students go out into the schools, many of the students they're going to work with are going to be racially, ethnically, linguistically, culturally diverse students. And so as Tanya's students said, we know how to do this. Like, we're a field of researchers and program evaluators and folks who know about, you know, school climate. We can do this in our programs. And not only can we do this, we have to do this in our programs to remain a relevant profession for those pre-K to 12 students that are gonna need us to be able to understand issues of identity, oppression, privilege, and how do we interrupt and disrupt all those systems of oppression for students in that population. So I say we can do it. We know how to do it. We just need to do it. It's time for us as a field to do this.
Yeah, I agree. And thank you all, Catalina, Sherry, and Tanya, as well as Tanya, your students. I very much appreciate the time that you spent here today. It has been such a pleasure. I feel like I learned a lot, and this information I think will really help other graduate students and graduate programs know where to go next. For everyone listening, thanks so much for joining us and taking an interest in EDI issues. We look forward to the rest of the series and hope you'll tune in for the next episode. For more information on EDI topics and social justice, please check out the NASP website. Thanks so much.